welcome to Smash to Pieces, a casual walk through the history of the Super Smash Bros. Ultimate roster. My name is Joe.
And my name is Matt.
And if you're new here, what we are doing on this show is we are playing one game for every character in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, from 1984's Duck Hunt to 2019's Fire Emblem Three Houses. And today's episode is covering our final Nintendo 64 game. It is representing fighter number 18, Dr. Mario, even though it should be fighter number 1, Epsilon, but whatever, who's counting? It is the 2001 Nintendo 64 game, Dr. Mario 64.
So it is not only our final Nintendo 64 game, but depending on how you count Japanese release dates versus Western release dates, it is the final Nintendo-published N64 game.
Mm-hmm. On this show, we have been using whatever came first as our way of dealing with release dates, so I think by that logic, yes, this is the final Nintendo-published Nintendo 64 game.
So the question is regarding, do we count the American date or do we count the Japanese date? And that kind of does matter, because Dr. Mario 64 didn't release in Japan until several years later in a compilation on the GameCube. So if you count the American release date of Dr. Mario 64, which is April 8th, 2001, against the Japanese release date of Mario Party 3, which is December 7th, 2000, then yes, this is the final Nintendo-published N64 game. But Mario Party 3 did come out later, May 7th, 2001, in America. So, depending on how you count that, I say it counts. I say it's the final N64 game published by Nintendo.
Well, again, like, if we use the same sort of method that we used to make the order of these games for the show in general, then yes, it was the last N64 game. So, neither of us dug this game that much. And full disclosure, this is our second time recording this episode. We lost half the recording, and as we pointed out on Twitter and as you pointed out to me, like, I mean, we made it 3 years before this happened, and this is like a podcast rite of passage. Every single podcast goes through this at least once.
Yep. So if it feels a little awkward, like we're trying to force specific points, almost like we felt pretty good making those points the first time around, then that's why.
Anyways, neither of us really dug this game all that much, but before we jump into that, Matt, what is Dr. Mario?
So Dr. Mario is a falling block puzzle game, in the vein of Tetris and Puyo Puyo, that kind of thing. If you want to expand the genre a bit, you can call it an action puzzle game, because then we get to fit in Puzzle League. And the way that it works is that you have a pill bottle as your field. Like, the aesthetic is all, like, it's pills and viruses and everything. But so gameplay-wise, in the pill bottle, the viruses are there as sort of predetermined blocks. They are there at the beginning before anything else happens. And the blocks that you're putting in are pills that are supposed to line up with the viruses, and they come in three different colors, red, blue, and yellow, and put four in a row, and it clears. And that's pretty much it. You can chain together things, because once you've gotten a clear, then any blocks that were attached to the pills that are now broken will fall and gravity will happen, and that's how you get chains. But really, that's the whole game. And I don't like it.
I think a common thread we had, I mean, you were better at this game than I was. You actually were able to do the win condition that we had set, which was to defeat Rudy the Clown. I didn't even see Rudy the Clown on my stream. I made it to like stage six and just, I think it was the first time in this show's history so far where I kind of just hit a point where I was like, I can't do it. I can't do it. I cannot do it. And I just had to stop, because it felt like I was throwing myself like face first into a brick wall. And just generally, it wasn't one of those, I've decided I don't want to do it. It was a feeling of like, I can't, and I know that I can't.
And you're playing on easy too, which, yeah. Like, I should note, even in Puzzle League, you were able to get to the very end with on normal and did, I think you got pretty far in hard, right?
I made it to Bruno in hard, I think.
Yeah. I think you beat Bruno in hard.
No, I don't think, I think I stalled on Bruno and never got past him.
Okay. But like you were able to accomplish that. And it feels to me like Dr. Mario is a much more difficult puzzle game than something like Puzzle League or Tetris is. And I think that the difference comes from the way that the field is set up with the pre-made existing blocks and the viruses. It's very difficult to get anything done beneath the top layer to the point that I would say, like, with very special exceptions, the top layer of virus blocks is pretty much all you have to work with. So you're kind of already starting the game in the danger zone. That's something that makes it feel very stressful. It makes it feel a lot more like the smallest mistake, even one little mistake, can just completely ruin you. Because once that happens, you're already in the danger zone. You're effectively in other puzzle games, this is where you would have already made many mistakes. So it kind of already feels like Dr. Mario is a game about like correcting mistakes that were made before you got there. So it cascades very quickly into just feeling very overwhelming.
Yeah, and it also just feels like, I don't know, something about the gameplay and how it's laid out and everything, it just feels like you can make one mistake and that mistake is like, no, you're done. You can't win anymore. But you're not going to know that you made that mistake for like 5 minutes. And by that point, it's too late. You can't fix it anymore. I know that plenty of people like this game. They like this game. So I have to believe that not everybody has that experience, because obviously, why would they like this game if they had the same experience that I did, where I look at Dr. Mario and I'm like, oh, this is visual overload. I don't know what's happening. And I'm just sort of shutting down as a result. I genuinely don't know how much of that was me and how much of that was the game, if that makes sense. I genuinely have no idea. And usually I can tell pretty well if it's the game or if it's me, I feel like.
I would say at least some of it was the game, because I was definitely feeling that too. And I don't know if it has to do partially with the number of colors, because I don't necessarily want to say that less colors makes it harder, because once Puzzle League added in the diamond blocks, it got substantially more difficult, but it feels like three colors almost makes it worse, because then there's just so much less you're able to do. Each color that isn't the one color you need is so much more debilitating, because it's less likely that you have somewhere to put a different color. Which, I don't know, that feels backwards now that I'm saying that out loud. Because I, like, that's the exact opposite of how I described Puzzle League getting harder with the extra color added in. Because then there's fewer paths to actually make getting a clear on that. I'm not sure what it is either. Maybe it is just the structure of you're already at the top and there's just less physical room to work with. But it just really feels more limiting. It feels more like there is one specific thing that you're supposed to do, and if you don't do that one specific thing, then all you're doing is actively making it worse, because maybe it was that the pieces that you were putting in were two different colors, and it wasn't just that you had to match one color to another, it was that you had to match those two colors to something at the same time. And it was just very unlikely that there were going to be multiple places where you could put down that pill without causing active difficulty for yourself. Because you could put a yellow side of the pill on top of a yellow virus, but then you're putting the blue side over a red virus. And that just got very overwhelming, because that's why it was the one specific place that you needed. Because the likelihood that you would be able to get those two perfect colors right next to each other was so, so low. And it was so, so difficult to, like, scan the entire field in real time to try to find that one specific place that would be perfect, while the AI opponent on the other side was able to do it at as fast as a computer can move.
Yeah, and I think that's another thing that, like, sort of gets me in this game is it doesn't feel like it's a game meant to be a competitive thing. Like Puzzle League feels like a game that was built for, yeah, no, it's a competitive puzzle game. But Dr. Mario kind of just feels more like it should be a single player figure it out game. It feels like the game would work a lot better if it was literally, hey, here is a predetermined setup of these viruses. Here are the pills you have to work with. Good luck.
And if I'm remembering correctly, that's not very far off from what the mobile game did.
I've never played Dr. Mario Online, but I've heard that it is honestly quite good.
I reviewed it for NWR and don't remember it at all. That was a while ago.
But I feel like that seems more in line with how this game is designed. Like, I don't know how else to put it, is that it does not feel like a game that was built specifically for going head-to-head with especially a computer. Because, yeah, that does add to the pressure when it's like, oh, the computer's figuring it out, no problem. And sometimes the AI just sort of gives up. Like, that happened in Puzzle League 2, but it's much more rare in this game. Like, your battle with Rudy ended because the AI just sort of decided to not AI anymore.
Yeah, and I should say, I don't feel good when that happens. It doesn't feel like I earned that victory. And it also feels like the one time that Rudy's AI happened to collapse was the only time I came anywhere close to winning. I think a big part of why it doesn't really work in that versus situation is because of the way that garbage blocks work, which sometimes they just don't. Like, the way that the garbage blocks work is that in puzzle games like this, it's very common for if you get chains, then garbage blocks will be thrown to your opponent. And the idea is that it's supposed to make things more difficult for your opponent. So in Dr. Mario, a couple color blocks will just randomly land somewhere. And ideally, a blue block will land on top of a yellow virus, and that'll mess up your opponent. Sometimes a blue block will land on a blue virus. Like, there was one time where, like, I sent garbage blocks to you, and then it cleared a row of viruses for you that then made a chain and sent garbage blocks back to me.
Yep.
Like, I wouldn't even describe that as good or bad. I would describe that as incorrect. It is wrong. That is not supposed to happen. At the same time, I feel like garbage blocks are kind of also supposed to be a chance for a comeback mechanic. Because when I think about Puzzle League and Tetris, in Tetris, when multiple garbage blocks come up at once, they all have the same column missing. So that it's kind of really easy once you get down to those garbage blocks to clear them quickly. And then usually those are chains that you have to send garbage blocks back to your opponent. And in Puzzle League, the garbage blocks falling from the top are slowly decoded so you can see what blocks it's going to be a couple seconds before they actually fall so that you can set up chains with those falling blocks from the garbage block. And when playing Puzzle League, a lot of the actual chains and combos that I got against the harder opponents like Mewtwo came from garbage blocks. So they can act a lot like a comeback mechanic in a way. But in Dr. Mario, they don't. The garbage blocks in Dr. Mario are just regular blocks that completely freeze the playing field when they're coming down. So in addition to the fact that they don't have any form of comeback mechanics, you also just have to sit there for like a full 5 seconds as they fall down. Maybe 5 seconds feels like I'm exaggerating, so it's probably not that long. But like, still, like, it's so frustrating that all you can do is sit and wait for it to happen. All it does is make it more difficult, except for when it's just incorrect and makes it and just clears something for you. And that's kind of what felt very frustrating about playing the campaign in Dr. Mario 64. And it also just kind of made it feel like versus mode wasn't very worthwhile, because it was just impossible to come back as soon as your opponent started to gain the lead, unless they specifically made a bunch of big mistakes, which really isn't the case in stuff like Tetris and Puzzle League, because there is a back and forth dynamic of those garbage blocks being sent back and forth. You're affecting each other in tangible ways where it's actually meaningful that you're playing together. Whereas in Dr. Mario, you're just kind of playing next to each other, and occasionally one garbage block will appear and it won't really do much. So that was a big part of why I just didn't care.
The other thing you mentioned, that whenever a garbage block does come down, you kind of just got to sit and wait. That happens a lot with this game. It is somehow way too fast paced while also being not fast paced in any way, shape, or form.
Yep.
It's bizarre, the general pacing of Dr. Mario 64. That does kind of take away from it, honestly.
It just doesn't add up to a very fun experience for me. And I don't enjoy saying that, because I don't like not liking games. And it's just, the thing about games like this is that I can see that people do enjoy this. It is something that people that were watching the stream, watching us not have a good time, they were seeing that and thinking, oh, I think I would like this game. So, like, even from watching us hate it, there were clearly people that thought it looked cool. And it's something that I've kind of been thinking about a lot lately, because it comes to an issue a lot where if one of us doesn't like a game and the other does, that we can have a conversation about that on the show and, like, kind of argue back and forth. But if we both kind of hate this game, then it's just us ragging on it for a half hour. I don't want people to think of that as, like, an anti-endorsement. I don't think that us saying that a game wasn't fun and that we didn't like it is a reason that you shouldn't play it. Because I also, some people said that after the Symphony of the Night episode, where, like, they were kind of interested in it, and then once we released our bonus episode on it and we didn't like it, they decided not to play it. I kind of feel bad about that, even though I don't take back anything that I said about that game, and I still feel the way that I felt, because I don't think that I'm important enough to influence your decision like that. And I don't want to either, because I don't think that it's a bad thing that people like games that I don't like. This came up with our Donkey Kong 64 episode, where I opened it saying that normally I don't want to change opinions or even necessarily acknowledge if I didn't like something that someone likes. But from the nature of us having a discussion on this podcast, I need to be honest about it, and we need to talk about it. And I think that there is some value in talking about things like that. But I don't want it to be a matter of, like, oh, we're, like, we say this game is terrible and no one should ever bother with it. I don't want that to be the point of the show as far as we get to it. I want discussions to be more of a line of, maybe I say something that challenges how you feel about a game. And you can either agree with that, or you can think about what I said and decide, no, you still like it. You don't agree with me. And that's kind of what I want to inspire. That's kind of why I feel like I need to, if I don't like something, I need to say it, and I need to explain why I don't like it. So that maybe if you're listening, then you can be reinforced in why you do. Because you've had to think about it more, and you came up with more reasons that you like it. And I think that this episode is a good time to talk about that, because I saw that this difference in how we felt versus how people watching us felt. Because it's something that I think is very relevant nowadays in a lot of, like, different fandoms and online discourse. I think people are afraid of dissenting opinions, and people take it personally when you don't like the thing that you don't like. And I want to kind of do the opposite. I want people to feel good when they hear me say something negative about something that they like. They consider that, and then they are more certain on the other side that they like the thing. I think that's kind of what we want to shoot for in this show. And I apologize that this is kind of soapboxy, because, like I said, this was a topic that we sort of naturally transitioned into because we were just kind of feeling frustrated by it. And I thought it was a really good point to bring up. But now that we didn't naturally flow into it, it was just a point that we hit on previously, it just kind of feels like a soapbox.
I mean, we weren't going to get around that. But, like, I think the main thing that it comes down to is, because of the nature of what this show is and how we're doing it, nostalgia is always going to be a factor. Other people's nostalgia, our nostalgia, all that. And nostalgia, especially in something like video games, people can get kind of touchy about games that they were, that they loved as a kid, because like when you're a kid, that game means a lot to you. I absolutely love Donkey Kong 64. You very much didn't. And that basically completely stemmed out of, I played it when I was a small child, you didn't as much, etc., etc. Our goal here is not to be the final jury on whether or not a game is good. We're going to like games that you don't like. We're going to not like games that you do like. That's just video games. That's just how it goes. Nostalgia is a powerful factor, and video games are a young enough medium that it is incredibly hard to not come at anything without the possibility that nostalgia is going to rule the whole thing. But yeah, it's at the end of the day, like, if you like Dr. Mario 64, you watch the streams, you thought it still looked good, you should give it a shot, honestly. You might find that you don't like we did. You might find that you do like it. But at the end of the day, like, in my opinion, video games are the most subjective medium ever to exist in art in any way, shape, or form, because there are so many different factors. What you love about how a video game plays, I might hate. What I love about how a video game plays, you might hate. And it just like goes back and forth, because it can even be little things like in Dr. Mario 64, I hate how it stops to make everything happen, and it all happens really slowly, and it's just this painful momentum killer. But some people might really like that because it gives them a chance to, I don't know, maybe like plan ahead, make a strategy in their head as the garbage blocks are falling. I don't know. It wasn't for me, but it could be your thing. And if you think it is, 100%, go give Dr. Mario 64 a try.
Yeah. It's less important to me in this show that you agree with what I'm saying, and more important that you understand why I'm saying it. So, as long as we're on the same page on that, I'm sorry to turn it into a soapbox. It's just, I was really happy with how we brought that up last time, and unfortunately, just from the nature of this being our second time recording this, it can't come up as naturally, but I think it was one of the better points we came up with the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, on that note of subjectivity and how there's so many factors to consider, there was actually something that both of us really liked in this game, being the sprite art and the animation.
Yeah, the pixel art in this game is, like, A+, which is absolutely bizarre, considering the time period in which it was made, where people basically considered 2D sprite art to be dead. Long live 3D. If your game's not a 3D model filled cool adventure game, then we aren't even going to publish it at all. 3D games were it. If your game was in 3D, it wasn't getting made back then. And yet this Nintendo 64 title just has these incredibly detailed, well done sprites. And that honestly came out of left field for me. That was a huge surprise, a very pleasant one.
I don't remember if it was one of us or someone in the chat, but like it was referred to as SNK quality animation, which kind of, yeah, like it was really good. It was obviously very limited because there wasn't much to animate, and maybe that's why it was so good, because there was so little that they had to do. But the end result is just fantastic, and it just kind of makes me wish that we had more AAA sprites nowadays. But it's kind of the same issue as traditional animation in film. Disney's not doing a lot of hand-drawn animation nowadays.
3D models are cheaper, and also they give you a bit more freedom to work with. If you have a game like Super Smash Bros., for instance, let's say that, and you want to give your characters alternate colors, or even alternate costumes, well, if you have a 3D model, you can just reuse the skeleton, and bam, you already got it. You're good.
Reuse the skeleton, the animations, as long as the new 3D model for the character fits on top of the old one, you don't have to do any of the other work all over again. And in sprites, that is not true at all. You need to redo every single step of the process in sprites.
From the ground up, essentially.
Every single animation, every single angle you can look at the character from, everything has to be totally redone. That's why 3D models are everywhere. Even games nowadays that look 2D, a lot of times, will actually secretly be 3D. A good example of this is Hades, which is, of course, the big indie game of 2020. Hades uses 3D models.
Yeah.
You might not notice that because it's so stylized. And I don't mean this as a knock against Hades, because Hades looks incredible. It just speaks to how much easier it is to use 3D models that the game uses them and looks like that.
And that's pretty much something that all Supergiant games use. Like Bastion is all 3D models. Transistor and Pyre are all 3D models. They're just really, really good at taking advantage of those. But like on the Nintendo 64, you might have noticed that basically none of the fucking games we played on the entire console had sprites at all.
Yoshi's Story did, and that was the only one that we played.
Pretty much.
And I can only think of one other N64 game in general that had them, being Paper Mario. I'm sure there were others. I just can't think of them off the top of my head.
Yeah, it was very rare to see sprites during this era. Because again, if you're young and you have never lived in a world where there weren't 3D games, when this era of games, the N64, the PlayStation, it is not an exaggeration that publishers legitimately constantly were like, if your game is not 3D, we're not making it. And that's why there's a bunch of really bad 3D games based on properties from, like, the days before 3D games.
Even Puzzle League used 3D. Like, Pokemon Puzzle League, like, when we did the Versus stream, you saw the textures glitching out. Because it was 3D models.
Mm-hmm.
It was applying the wrong textures to the blocks, and that was only possible because there were blocks to apply textures to.
Yeah. But anyways, we've talked enough about that. We can talk about the thing that's fine. Music is fine, I guess. I mean, it's there. It exists.
I think it's really funny that we literally recorded this already and I still need to pull up the OST to remember any of it.
I mean, the main song that you gotta keep in mind is Fever. It's Fever. It's not the best version of Fever.
It is a version of Fever.
And it has a duck quacking for some reason. I don't understand.
It sounds fine, I guess.
It's fine. The one that doesn't sound great, I think this is probably one of the weaker versions of Chill.
I think I actually said on the stream that I'm not a big fan of this version of Chill.
I like the general tone that it's going for, where, like, there's this cool groove to it, but it doesn't go anywhere.
And the MIDI samples don't do it any favors either.
I think the bass is good. I think the bass MIDI is very good. Nothing else, though. This is a really small soundtrack.
Well, yeah, it's one of those soundtracks that we basically have to talk about every song because there's just no other songs. And like, speaking of, hey, I actually really like Cube. Why was Cube never in Smash Brothers? Because that's the only time that Dr. Mario music has ever been remixed. Ever.
Yeah. And it's just Fever and Chill. Nothing else. I think that's likely because Dr. Mario never got a stage. If there was a Dr. Mario stage, I'm sure it would have gotten more than just those two.
I mean, the Mario sports games have more songs than Dr. Mario does.
I hate Cube. Not because it is a bad song, but because this is the song that played during most of the stages that just I didn't like playing. And so I have flashbacks, like PTSD style, back to Dr. Mario Nom. I can't listen to this song and enjoy it. That's just where I am in life.
Which is unfortunate, because I love this song. This is the only song that I ever want to play on this game.
Meanwhile, the last song that you can play during stages is QQ. KK, it could be asking why are you playing this game? I don't even think I made that joke last time. I had to make it now. I think this is my least favorite song of the game. It's really repetitive.
It spends so much time on that opening loop. And then it turns into a Paper Mario battle theme.
Yeah, once it leaves the loop, it's good. I have a good time with that, but it's not long enough and the rest of the song is just... not great.
It spends like 15 seconds being good and then goes right back into that opening loop that I hate.
Yeah, that's basically it. I mean, do you have anything else you want to point out?
I like how I can like hear you stifling a laugh because you know what's coming.
Do I?
You might, being the correct version of Professor Oak's lab from Pokemon Stadium 2.
Yeah, I guess I do owe you that.
Yeah, because I don't know what the heck... I don't know where that version you put in last episode came from, but it is not good, and it is not the one in Pokemon Stadium 2.
When I put it in, literally the thought process was, this sounds awful, but I guess, sure. And then when the episode came out, you were like, I don't know what the hell that song is. It's not the song I was talking about.
I legitimately don't know where it came from. It's not on the Pokemon Stadium 2 soundtrack, as far as I can tell.
It, on KH Insider, it is. And it's labeled Professor Oak's Lab.
Okay.
But yeah, it's Dr. Mario 64's soundtrack is... it's fine.
Which, coincidentally, is also the truth of Pokemon Stadium 2's. Which just kind of makes it unfortunate that this is where we end it for this entire console.
Yeah, two in a row of soundtracks being all right. I mean, even Puzzle League is bad MIDI versions of anime songs. So.
Yeah. It's been a while since we had, not since Banjo-Tooie, really.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously we had Halo and Sonic in there, but those don't count. Those are bonus episodes.
We had a hell of a run with, DK64, I think, has a good soundtrack. And then you had Kirby 64 and then Majora's Mask and then Banjo-Tooie and then Puzzle League Stadium 2 and Dr. Mario 64. I mean, I would imagine that this game did not get a ton of, like, development priority.
No, and I believe the composer is also someone that we'd never heard of, too, right?
Yeah. I assume that by this time, most Nintendo studios were prioritizing the upcoming Nintendo GameCube games more so than they were prioritizing Dr. Mario 64, because the 64 was on its way out, and it was time for the new blood.
The composer is Seiichi Tokunaga, and as far as I can tell, he never did another game soundtrack. And I'm not even sure he did any other music ever. The only results that I find when I search his name are this game and a researcher for, like, electric conductors in Tokyo.
Let me tell you, as I've learned through Original Sound Chat, that happens more often than you'd think. Where just there are multiple people with the same name, and one of them is like a massive name in like bio technology or some shit. It's bizarre. It happens way more often than you would think.
Or maybe it's the same guy. I don't know. Clearly he didn't do any other game soundtracks.
Yeah. Maybe he just moved on and went to work on like electric engineering. I don't know. I don't have anything else to say about Dr. Mario 64. I'm sorry for folks that really like this game. You are not wrong to do so. But boy, this is probably the most aggressively not for me game that we have played on this show.
Well, there was Earthbound.
There was Earthbound, but even Earthbound had parts of it where I was like, yeah, the writing's really funny and I just sort of don't like the game, but like everything around the game is great. I don't feel like I had that with Dr. Mario. The like sprite art is literally the only thing I can think of where I was like, yeah, no, this is legitimately cool and impressive. Nothing else.
That's all it is.
So I guess it's time to put the Nintendo 64 to rest. Sleep well, great Prince. I love you, Nintendo 64, but also almost every single game we've played for this console generation was a massive pain in the ass in some way or another. So in that specific way, I will not miss the Nintendo 64.
Well, if you want to be technical, we still got one more.
Technically, but it wasn't one here, so I don't count it.
We sure count its release date.
Yeah, we sure do, actually. That's true. We did count it by the Nintendo 64 release date. Look, our next game is Animal Crossing, but here's the thing. We have already played Animal Crossing. It is done. The playing part is done, at the very least. And we've already recorded the pre-show. We recorded this pre-show back in September of 2020.
Back in the Halcyon days before the Mega Cycle.
Yeah. We actually played Animal Crossing for the month of October, from October 1st to October 31st, and ended on Halloween. So what's going to happen is that we will have taken the footage, and Matt has been working really hard to create sort of like a highlight reel, essentially is what I'd probably call it, of our time. We are joined by my roommate Ben from the Super Mario World episode, and Matt's sister Katie, whose solo guest experience has not yet happened, but will eventually. And so that's what we're going to be streaming.
It's sort of like, it started out where it's like, yeah, this is going to be a highlight reel. And like over the course of your first session playing, you can kind of feel my editing philosophy change to actually, this is more or less going to be everything that happened just with the dead air cut out.
Yeah. And it's essentially some videos. It's going to be long. All of the parts currently, I think at minimum 4 parts. Most likely.
Because it's not done yet.
It's not done yet. That number could go up. We don't know. But yeah, that's how that's going to go. And for that reason, we are going to hit back to us in the past, back in the old days of 2020, roughly 4,860 years ago. And we're going to talk about Animal Crossing, and then starting the week after this episode's release, we're going to start premiering the parts every week.
Which will premiere on twitch.tv/NintendoWorldReport.
Oh, also, because this was recorded in September, at the end of the episode, I mentioned that my Twitter is at TheDebugga. It's not anymore. It is now at StringPixel. One might say that I could have waited until we put up this thing that we recorded in September for me to switch over, but no. Good luck! So, welcome. Our next game is representing fighter number 45, Villager. It is the 2001 GameCube game, Animal Crossing. Now, when you hear this, we have already played this game. We're done.
But right now, it is Sunday, September 27th.
Yeah, 2020.
To give you some context, we don't know if the world's on fire yet.
Yeah, the world could be gone before this goes out, for all we fucking know. But
the PS5 and Xbox Series X aren't out yet, so don't tell us if they're good. No spoilers. Yeah,
you can't. Don't comment on this episode to tell us. The main reason that we are playing this the way we are is because Animal Crossing flows weird. And also, we're not alone for this episode. We have two guests for what will probably be the only time we ever have two guests, because that's a lot to schedule around.
How embarrassing will it be if we change our minds before we get to Animal Crossing and have already done it?
That would be weird. I doubt that'll happen, though, unless somebody is really, really... Unless two people are really fighting to be guests on Dr. Mario 64. Anyways, we are joined, first off, by returning guest, Ben.
Hi.
He's here. He was our guest for Super Mario World.
Yowza.
We didn't throw him into the well like we have all of our other guests, because we hadn't started that tradition yet, so we had to lure him back somehow. And we are also joined by Katie.
Hello. How are y'all doing tonight?
Doing pretty all right in what is very likely 2021.
I wasn't talking to you. I was talking to fine people at home.
I'm at home.
You're going to cause... Actually, yeah, we're all at home.
Stay home.
Stay home. That might not be a problem, but there might be a vaccine by that. We don't know.
It will be a problem.
We're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk
probably
about...
not.
There's probably not.
This is a sad episode.
Let's talk about Animal Crossing. So, we are playing the original GameCube Animal Crossing, which famously started as a 64 game called Animal Forest in Japan that we did not get because we are filthy casuals, and we didn't even deserve the most casual of filthy casual games that Nintendo made at the time, I guess. But it was brought over here on GameCube. Famously, I believe the RAM or the amount of data on the disc on GameCube is so small that once you load the game, you can take the disc out and the GameCube will run it entirely in its RAM. Like, that's insane.
Yeah, that's a secret N64 game for you.
Yeah. So, the way that we are going to be doing this is we are setting up a town and the four of us are going to play Animal Crossing for 1 month. Probably not every day, because, well, modern Animal Crossing is built to be played every day by one person. Original Animal Crossing, if you play it every day, people 2 and 3 and 4 are gonna have a much worse experience than person 1.
We could do it like a rotation. Who plays first every day?
Then you're playing like 9 days.
What I generally mean is like this game, more than any other game in the series, I feel like has a problem where
if you have four people in the same town, first person's going to do everything there is to do. They're going to get all the fossils. They're going to buy the cool stuff out of the shop that does that stuff doesn't come back. And then it's just generally fishing, which fishing is good. I like fishing. But I'm personally not going to play every day. I'm not going to tell you guys that you can't play every day. You're free. It's a free country. You can play however much you fucking want.
I'm interested in playing as often as I can because the original Animal Crossing is so simple that it almost feels like it'll, in a weird backward way, it'll be worth it to play every day. And also, I'll be much less likely to miss the holidays, especially the smaller ones. Like, of course, if we're playing through the whole month of October, it finishes off with Halloween. But
that's true.
There are also a couple of other little things that happen along the way that are just like, you know, talk to Tortimer and get a thing. And it's like, you know, nothing too special, but I don't want to like
use those tickets
forget.
At the end of the month.
I'm going to remember my tickets this time. This is not the first time I've gone back to GameCube. I'm going to use those October tickets this time.
Tortimer's still alive in this one.
Yeah.
He hasn't died yet.
That'll be nice.
Yeah, we're going to get to see him before he dies. Ah, that made myself sad. But yeah.
From what I remember, the first game, you can do a lot more with just talking to villagers. Whereas in like the newer ones, you kind of hear most of what they say. In the first week or so.
I believe that in the first game you can explicitly ask if they have a favor for you to do.
Yeah,
which they kind of did away
yes.
with. They will not always have one to give you, but it lets you explicitly ask for one.
And also, it's going to be really weird to be playing this the year that New Horizons came out, because New Horizons does a lot of things a lot differently, specifically because, not just from like a modern standpoint where like they modernized a bunch of stuff, not enough if you ask me for some of it, but you know, but also like New Horizons is explicitly a live service game, and this Animal Crossing exists before a live service game was a thing.
Yeah.
And it's gonna be a little bit weird to like transition back to the beginning like that. So real quick, I want to explain why are we recording this pre-show in September of 2020 when all estimates point to getting to Animal Crossing around January, early February of 2021. It is because the way that we are going to do Animal Crossing, the way we've been streaming games where we are playing them one day a week for like 3 hours, first of all, only playing Animal Crossing one day a week is not exactly the best way to sort of play Animal Crossing in general. It's not really what it is meant for. It is meant for you to pop in for like an hour or two every day or every other day or something like that. But second, Animal Crossing on the GameCube is not a game you can play for 3 hours and still have things to do, in my opinion. So, the way we are doing it is we are recording our gameplay as we play, and we are going to have a video edited together of some highlights of those sessions, and we're going to release that in like a week or so, a week from this episode coming out.
I hope.
That's the hope. Something could have gone horribly wrong between now and then, but
video's got to be edited.
Yeah.
If it's not done by the time that we have to... So the way that it's going to premiere is that when it is done, we are going to use our normal Twitch slot to show you this video. I'm thinking maybe it'll be like around an hour, ideally. Maybe a little less, maybe a little more. And on our normal Thursday slot, assuming it's still Thursday, we are going to do this video instead of a regular stream. And that'll be there for you guys to see. And if it is not ready, then we'll just do what we always do, which is I'm going to say to Doba, we should do just a Smash Brothers stream. And then he'll say, that's a good idea. And then we don't do it.
Every single time. And then Another thing is that by the time you hear this, we have already recorded the Animal Crossing episode. We haven't, at time of recording, obviously, because we haven't started playing the game yet, but by the time you hear this pre-show, the episode's already done. And it'll come out the week after that, hopefully. All of this is put with a caveat of this is months away. Much could change. But for the most part, do you guys have any hopes or dreams for this playthrough?
I'm going to get this out of the way up front. I'm not a very big fan of Animal Crossing. I am a fan of the community aspect of Animal Crossing. Like, the first month that an Animal Crossing game is out, and everyone's playing with each other, and, like, talking about the game, and it's, like, it's really an event. That is what I like. That is the entire reason that I bothered buying New Horizons. And just as I kind of expected, once that experience went away, that event ended, I dropped that game pretty hard. So I don't know if I'm really gonna care for this.
It'll be fun.
I think it'll be interesting, especially since there'll be a certain novelty in going back to the original, but it's also that the original, with some minor things, is largely stripped of some of the quality of life features that make the latter games so tolerable in the first place. So it'll be interesting to see how we're able to keep up with this. Personally, one of my hopes is that I'm hoping to just kind of pop into the town and, you know, use it as a way to relax after long days or whatever. And I want to try and, you know, scoop through as many of the few events that are in October as we can. Unfortunately, we're not playing in summer, so we can't do the aerobics, which is the only, like, really important holiday in the GameCube version. But I think it'll be fun, and I just like the collecting aspect of Animal Crossing, so I'm going to be focusing on that. You guys are going to have a few full museum and, like...
Will we, though?
Yes. We say that every... We've done this before, spoiler alert, where we've had a communal town shared between people.
Between all four... These four people.
We got pretty good.
You and I always say... We're gonna get all the fish. We're gonna get all the bugs.
I'm gonna pull up the spreadsheet. I'm gonna check how many of those fish and bugs we got.
Isn't it impossible for you to get all the fish and all the bugs?
We'll get all the ones we can. In October.
We'll get all the October ones.
Yeah.
Okay. That seems like a more doable goal than twisting the bounds of time, because we will not be time traveling.
It's still a lot.
Every day when you've finished, you send an in-game mail saying what you caught, and that's the only way you communicate about it.
we'll use the bulletin board.
Yeah, you can use the bulletin board. We'll like that's another thing that we...
I caught.
I think it was Matt that brought up the thought, but I think we're going to try and use the in-game communication as much as possible. It'll be weird... to not just go into a Discord chat and be like, this is what I did. But in a way, that's like another part of the Animal Crossing experience. So I think I agree that that's kind of important to keep intact. It'll be a neat thing.
I think that as much as I hate typing in GameCube Animal Crossing, I'll get used to it. And I think that I am actually kind of genuinely excited about using those features, because I know that's not something that, I believe the last time we talked about this, you and Ben didn't really play Animal Crossing with another member of your household when you played it when you were younger.
I did.
You did?
Yeah, me and my sister used to play Wild World. We shared, that's the only time shared my DS.
Well, original Animal Crossing.
I didn't play the original Animal Crossing at all as a kid. I didn't have a GameCube.
Well,
I didn't get it until like junior year.
Well, either way, you guys, in a weird way, I almost feel like the original is kind of more built for that than the subsequent ones are. And, you know, Matt and I grew up in the same house, so we did make use of some of those features, and I'm looking forward to using it with a full group of four people instead of just two people with two extra save files.
Yeah.
Well, like, it's really funny that you mentioned the whole, like, this game feels the most built for sort of multi-person towns. Because, yeah, it kind of feels like later Animal Crossings, while keeping that feature intact, would de-emphasize it as much as possible. And up to the point where, as Matt described to me at one point when he started a second save file for New Horizons, and was like, "Oh, they're basically a second class citizen. Like they get nothing."
Yeah.
Or in New Leaf, where like, no, the first person gets to be the mayor, and everybody else can suck it.
Yeah, this is, I guess up to City Folk, it was still fine. But later Animal Crossings definitely made it so that if you weren't the first one to play, then you
got a lesser experience for it.
Yeah.
And that's not the case in this one.
I'm a little worried about stationery being finite in the store at the beginning.
True.
Oh, I forgot. Everything is finite in the store, bud.
No, but I mean, like, as far as, like, oh, we're going to use the in-game communication, it's like, yeah, but it's going to take, like, 4 or 5 days until everyone can use
letters. Yeah, but we've got bulletin boards.
Letters.
The thing that I'm scared about is the wardrobe.
Yeah. Well, you can get shirts. You can get clothing pretty easily from neighbors and villagers and whatnot. But they give you a lot of furniture stuff too, so maybe not. All right,
we are coming up on probably one of the longest pre-shows of the show so far.
You say that,
which I can't imagine any other game's going to go longer than four people. I don't know. We'll see.
These pre-shows always go 20 minutes, and we have a guest.
All right, what villagers do you want?
Bob. Everybody wants Bob, and that's why we want Bob.
I want, what's her name, Olivia? Cat Olivia? I don't want Rocco.
I want Rocco.
See, the problem is, I barely remember, outside of Bob and Rocco, I barely remember what villagers are in this game that aren't villagers I know from later games.
Same.
Even if I'm like the third person in line playing, if we get Rocco, I'm resetting the game.
No.
Okay, so someone else has to be first.
This is it. No, it doesn't matter if I'm like the third or fourth person. I'm deleting the save file.
That's another thing. You know what? We should mention real quick.
That's my past experience.
I can't wait for them to be mean to us.
I'm so excited. Yeah.
That's what Rocco reminds me of.
It's going to, like I say, I'm excited, and I am excited, but like I'm going to be like, emotionally distraught every time they like are even like a little bit sassy to me, but I'm so excited. So excited.
So yeah. That's it. We're gonna get into the meat of things. So you can follow me on Twitter at TheDabaga. You can follow Matt at Grimace Duminis. Katie, where can they follow you if you want to tell them that?
You could follow me at FangZB on Twitter if you really want to. I don't think that you want to, unless you really, really like art.
You can see the hexagons.
Unless you really, really like art and Twitter bots.
And you can also follow the show at Smashterpieces. And you can also find us on YouTube and Facebook under the same name. You can follow our editor, Peter, at Pete Speakeasy. He's not editing this episode because that was the caveat for having two guests. Was that I was not going to put that on Peter. But he did some post-processing, hopefully. And he edits all of our other stuff, mostly, sort of. It goes half and half nowadays, but you know. Did I say his name?
Yes.
Peter? Yeah.
Did I say his username?
Speakeasy?
It's at Pete Speakeasy, just in case I didn't say it. It's fine.
We'll fix in post.
That in.
Oh, slippery.
I will not fix that in post.
We stream at twitch.tv/NintendoWorldReport. Right now it's every Thursday.
I don't know, maybe we've been fired.
Who knows? That's true. We could have gotten fired in the past 5 months. Halloween is gonna be me skirting the line.
What?
Don't worry about it.
I will.
So, yeah.
I'm worried about it.
We go every Thursday. At least that's how it is now. If it's a different day, follow us on Twitter. You'll find out what day it is. Like I said, the video, we will premiere it on Twitch on the Thursday after this episode comes out, hopefully. And then it will go up on YouTube for public viewing right afterwards, basically. And then the episode of Animal Crossing will come out the next week after that. So with that, my name is Joe.
My name is Matt.
I'm Katie.
Ben.
And we will see you next time for our episode on Animal Crossing.